Welcome back to our series on the book of Jeremiah, and particularly Jeremiah and his friends, a series sponsored by the Christadelphian Video Service under the theme of Jeremiah and the Faithful Remnant. And this is the fifth study in the series. And we're going to talk about the inhabitress of Lebanon. And this is a very interesting one because this particular woman was mentioned a number of times through various records in the Bible, and she is the wife of Jehoiakim. So let's just go back and remind ourselves who she really is. She's the daughter of Elnathan, son of Akbor. Now, Elnathan, the son of Akbor, was one of the princes, or if you like, one of the war cabinet, one of the generals, defending the city against the various invaders that were coming against Judah in this time period. He was a man of power, and he was the man that was sent by King Jehoiakim to Egypt to drag Urijah the prophet back and to murder him. So this was the father-in-law of King Jehoiakim. And his daughter, Nehushta, was married to Jehoiakim. So he was married, he very a political alliance, very likely. But this woman was to be perhaps one of the great problems in his life. The name Nehushta means a piece of brass. You might remember that in the days of Hezekiah, the brazen serpent became a subject of idolatry. And they called it Nehushtan, which of course is the same meaning as the wife of Jehoiakim. So a piece of brass. She was certainly a woman of great arrogance and great pride, because that's specifically condemned in the record. Noted for glamour, pride and arrogance. We're going to see that coming out as we go through Jeremiah 13 and 22. So we're going to deal with a woman that influenced King Jehoiakim, and I believe probably influenced him for very bad things. A woman who eventually was defied by her son Jehoiachin and went off to Babylon into captivity. Well, we find her mentioned in Jeremiah 22 and in verse 23. And picking up the record now that the condemnation is made of King Jehoiakim down to verse 21, and in verse 22 we have a transition. The wind shall eat up thy pastors, and thy lovers shall go into captivity. So, you know, one of the lovers, obviously, of King Jehoiakim was his wife. Surely thou shalt be ashamed and confounded for all thy wickedness. So there's the end of Jehoiakim. And then God addresses Nehushta, and he says, O inhabitant of Lebanon. Now, if you've got a King James margin in the Oxford Bible, you see it says the inhabitress of Lebanon. And that's absolutely correct. It's feminine, the Hebrew. God is addressing a woman here. And, of course, we know that at the end of the verse, it's a woman in travail. So this is a direct prophecy to the queen Nehushta, the wife of Jehoiakim. And she is condemned for making her nest in the cedars. And we know that women are naturally nest builders. And you can imagine how she would have given great attention to the fit out of the palace that they'd built at Beth Hakkerem. It was a grand palace that had been built on the cheating that was done against the laborers on the building site, who weren't paid for their work. It was a palace that was competing in cedars, trying to outcompete Solomon and David's house of Lebanon. A palace that had all the luxuries you could imagine, including vermilion paint right through it, and windows, which is something, of course, was unusual in those days in a palace. So whatever it was an amazing place that they had built at Beth Hakkerem, south of Jerusalem. And so we have this condemnation of her sitting in this palace in her pride. And it says, how gracious shalt thou be when pangs come upon thee. In other words, you are airing yourself as the owner of this palace, probably taking all the other women on grand tours of all the things she's bought for the palace. And her pride is in this palace. And God's saying, you're going to be brought down and go into a woman in travail. So a very specific prophecy and condemnation of this inhabitress of Lebanon. So let's just learn a little more about her and what happened in her life. As we said, she's the daughter of Elnathan, the son of Akbor, a top general. She's ensconced in a nest of cedars in Jeremiah 22, verse 23. She's proud of the highly decorated palace of Beth Hakkerem. And we just see it described in verse 14 and 15 with the windows and the cedars and the excesses of that palace that were there. And it's mentioned in Jeremiah 6, verse 1, that destruction was coming against Beth Hakkerem. God was greatly displeased by this show of indulgence and waste at a time of famine and a time of threatening invasions from Babylon. A complete and utter indulgence by this couple, the king and the queen. And I believe she was showing people over her new palace and would soon experience great shame and humiliation. Well, what else do we know about her? She's ensconced in the nest of cedars. Specific prophecies given to her as the queen mother. If you come to Jeremiah 13 verse 18, which we'll come back to a bit later on, but just a little correction to the record in Jeremiah 13 verse 18, you need to note, quite correct from the Hebrew, picked up by the RV, in Jeremiah 13 verse 18, where it says, "Say unto the king and to the queen," this is an address to Jehoiachin and his mother. It should be the queen mother. And it's the same in chapter 29 and verse 2. The Hebrew is not just the queen, it's the queen mother. So again, that's a correction that needs to be made in the record. So she has specific prophecies addressed to her. She would finally see her husband cruelly tortured and humiliated in public by the Babylonians about 4 years later. So here's a woman that was a great danger to Jeremiah, and she was a woman who was going to be set at naught finally as she was carted off into captivity. And she went away into captivity, a widow, never to return again. So a tragic end to this woman, but let's just go into some of the lessons we can learn from her. She was a woman that set a pattern for the women's liberation in the nation. You know, Jeremiah later had to tackle women in chapter 44. This was after the fall of the city and the final captivity had taken place. Women began to take charge. Instead of Jeremiah arguing with the leaders of the nation, as he'd done in the past, he now finds himself arguing with a group of a very aggressive women. And in doing so, he said this to them. And these are the words of Jeremiah 44, verse 9. "Have you forgotten the wickedness of your fathers and the wickedness of the kings of Judah and the wickedness of their wives?" Now, we know nothing about the wife of Jehoahaz, the wife of Jehoiachin, the wife of Zedekiah. What we do know is we know a lot about Nehushta, the wife of King Jehoiakim. And so Jeremiah says, "Don't you see the Babylonian invasion came because of wickedness and the wickedness of the kings and the wickedness of their wives? And your wickedness and your wives, which are committed in the streets of Judah." So we would read from that that very likely she was the driving force behind the decorated palace that Jehoiakim had built. So she was to be sent away and to die in Babylon. Again, God hates those who are proud. God hates those who use robbery for their own purposes. And very likely she was the power behind the throne in many ways because she received so many specific condemnations. We now come down to her son Jehoiachin. Now, Jehoiachin was only 18 years old when he began to reign. He was only to reign for 3 months. So after Jehoiakim was killed by the Babylonians, the king reigned for 3 months, and then the Babylonians decide to take him away into captivity and put his uncle Zedekiah on the throne. So God had predicted this. In Jeremiah 22, reading now from verse 24, "As I live, says Yahweh, though Kaniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were the signet of my right hand, yet will I pluck thee from thence." So this was now God saying to Jehoiachin, his name Kaniah is also another name for Jehoiachin. Just notice that, how many kings had multiple names, but this is definitely Jehoiachin we're talking about. God says, "I wouldn't care if he was the ring on my finger, I would still throw him out, because he's done evil like his father. And I will give him into the hand of those that seek your life, into the hand of those whose face thou fearest, even to the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into the hand of the Chaldeans." So you can imagine that having seen his father so ruthlessly destroyed by the Babylonians, how much Jehoiachin would have feared the Babylonians. God says, "Because you're evil, you're going to be sent away to Babylon. And I will cast you out, says God, and your mother that bear there." Notice again the specific inclusion of Nehushta. "You go to another country where you were not born, and there you shall die. But to the land where you desire to return, they shall not return." And Jehoiachin never came back, nor did Nehushta. So God is very clear here that Jehoiachin, even though he would reign for 3 months, would eventually be taken away to Babylon there to die for the rest, and to be there for the rest of his life and to die there. So God's very specific. In verse 26, I will cast thee out and thy mother that bare to another country. Then he goes down to verse 27 and verse 28. God says this, is this man Coniah a despised broken idol? Is he a vessel where there is no pleasure? Now you can take the is out of there because it's in italics. What God is saying, Coniah is a broken idol. Coniah is a vessel with no pleasure. That's why he's being cast out. So God is saying, look, I'm throwing him out because he's no good. I'm throwing out because there's no worth in him. So just ignore the italic is there and you get the sense. A despised broken idol. A vessel with nothing in it. Wherefore are they cast out? He and his seed are cast into a land that they know not. And God says, earth, 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 people of Israel, hear the word of the Lord. Jehoiakim wouldn't hear it. Jehoiachin's not hearing it. And then we have an interesting prophecy made about Jehoiakim. It says this, write ye this man childless. And this has been a source of some confusion because we can find in the record that Jehoiakim did have children. The point is, as far as the dynasty was concerned, none of his children were set upon the throne of David. So just read on. For no man of his seed shall prosper sitting on the throne of David and ruling anymore in Judah. So he would have children in Babylon, but none of them would ever become kings. So he was childless as far as the dynasty was concerned. The kingship passed to his uncle Zedekiah. So Jehoiachin's family was not to have the throne of David in that age. So there was the condemnation upon Jehoiachin and his mother in the 7th year of Jehoiakim. So he would have been only 14 when this prophecy was delivered. So we now have Jeremiah chapter 13. And this happens after the death of Jehoiakim and before Jehoiachin was taken away. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 13. Now we've already noted in verse 18 that this prophecy was to the king and his mother, the queen mother. So that's very important to notice the context. Now just giving you the story of what happened in Jeremiah 13, we find that there was a garment that had to be buried by the river Euphrates. So in verse 1, Jeremiah was told to get a linen girdle, to wet it, put it on himself, and then go right up to the river Euphrates and to hide it there. So he buried it on the banks of the river Euphrates. So a long journey from Jerusalem to the river Euphrates by Jeremiah. Apart from going to Egypt at the end of his life, that appears to be the only time that he ever left the country. So he went up there, and then in verse 6, after many days, so this is very likely something that he did perhaps in the 7th year of Jehoiakim. Now in the 4th year, 4 years later, in the time of Jehoiachin, he's told to go after many days, go up there and get the garment, which he does. He digs it up, and of course the garment by now is rotted and profitable for nothing. So he comes back with this rotten garment and puts it in front of the king and the queen mother and gives them an address that God wants him to say. So here's what he had to say in verse 9. Thus says Yahweh, after the manner, this manner will I mar the pride of Judah and the great pride of Jerusalem. Now notice, straight away, the thing that is being put in front of the king and the queen mother is pride, pride, pride. And, you know, God hates their pride. Look at verse 17. If you will not hear it, my soul shall weep in secret for your pride. And in verse 18, humble yourselves. You see, this was the problem. They were proud and they were arrogant. And I believe that even after Jehoiakim was so cruelly killed by the Babylonians, that Nehushta continued to stay in this palace and to get Jehoiakim to try and stay with her and to try and rule over the people still. And this was a prophecy against their pride. So God is absolutely against the pride. This evil people which refuse to hear my words, which walk in the imagination of their heart in verse 10, who walk after the gods to serve them and to worship them, shall even be as this girdle, which is good for nothing. So you're going to be destroyed. You're going to be rotted away like this girdle. So here is a parable or a little mime that Jeremiah goes through with this girdle. And so he says, "For as the girdle cleaves to the loins of a man, so I have caused to cleave unto me the whole house of Israel and the whole house of Judah, saith Yahweh, that they might be unto me for a people, and for a name, and for a praise, and for a glory. But they would not hear." And that is exactly the words that were said to Jehoiakim. "This has been thy policy from thy youth. You will not hear." And the people were just the same. So Jeremiah's got a prophecy to give to the king and to the queen mother. And when you come down to that prophecy, verse 14, "I will dash them against one another, even the fathers and the sons together, saith Yahweh, not pity nor spare, but have mercy, but destroy them. Hear ye and give ear, be not proud." And again, this connection of pride that you get from the opening verse in verse 9 comes again in verse 15. "Give glory to your God," he says in verse 16, "before he caused darkness and before your feet stumble upon the dark mountains, while you look for light, he turn it into the shadow of death and make it gross darkness. But if you will not hear," and again that's a reference to the policy of Jehoiakim, "you will not hear, my soul shall weep in secret places for your pride. Mine eyes shall weep sore because run down with tears because Yahweh's flock is carried away captive." So there's going to be a great mourning both by Jeremiah and by God once they go into captivity. So the appeal is made in verse 18, "Say to the king and to the queen," and as we said before, if you check the RV here in Jeremiah 29 verse 2 and the Hebrew, it's actually the queen mother. So this is Jehoiachin and his mother being addressed. "Say to them, humble yourselves, sit down, for your principality shall come down, even the crown of your glory. And the cities of the south shall be shut up, and none shall open them." That is, of course, Beth Hakkerem, the palace was south of Jerusalem. "And Judah shall be carried away captive, all of it shall be wholly carried away captive." So, it's interesting, isn't it, that, again, you have this mention in verse 21, "Sorrow shall take thee as a woman in travail," which, of course, what was said to Nehushta in Jeremiah 22. And isn't it interesting again, verse 22, "If you say in your heart, wherefore come these things upon me? For the greatness of thine iniquity are thy skirts discovered and thy heels made bare." Of course, that again is the reference to a woman, that she would be uncovered. So isn't it interesting that we have this condemnation going through chapter 13 as well, this time to Jehoiachin and his mother. So just looking at the comparison between the two of them, the two records in Jeremiah 13 and Jeremiah 22, to the king and the queen mother, so we have the address being done to the palace where the queen lived, and we have in Jeremiah 13 and verse 18 and verse 13, specific reference to the mother of the king. Pride is a common theme right through these chapters. The appeal to humble themselves is in both chapters. The mention of evil iniquity is in both chapters. Trusting in falsehood is in both chapters. And of coming shame also is specifically mentioned. So Nehushta certainly was still being appealed to by Jeremiah and by God, even in that 3 months of the reign of Jehoiachin. But what would Jehoiachin do? Well, it's quite interesting, isn't it, that this is the summary in the book of Kings about Jehoiachin, 2 Kings 24, verse 8 to 12. Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. And look at this. I mean, all things God could say about his 3 month reign, his mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. So again, God specifically intrudes into the record the influence of this woman upon both Jehoiakim and Jehoiachin. And he did that which was evil. Is that a consequence of his mother? According to all that his father had done. Well, obviously his parents were no help to him. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem and the city was besieged. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city and his servants did besiege it. And Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother, and his servants, and his princes, and his officers. The king of Babylon took them in the 8th year of his reign. That's the 8th year of the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar. So, again, after 3 months, the dynasty of Jehoiachin came to an end. And the line of Jehoiakim came to an end with him. And they were taken away into Babylon. But again, just notice the influence and the specific reference to his mother in all of that. So, there was to be specific things would happen to Nehushta because of her influence over her husband and over her son. This is what happened in 2 Kings 24, verse 13. Nebuchadnezzar carried out thence all the treasures of the house of Yahweh and the treasures of the king's house. You can imagine them, can't you? Them stripping in pieces the house of cedar, the house of Lebanon that they had built. He cut in pieces the vessels of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of Yahweh, as Yahweh had said. He carried away all Jerusalem and all the princes and all the mighty men of valor, even 10,000 captives, and the craftsmen and the smiths. None remained, save the poorest sort of the people of the land. In that captivity, Ezekiel and his wife went to Babylon. He carried away Jehoiakim to Babylon and the king's mother and the king's wives and his officers and the mighty of the land. He carried away into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. That's a very comprehensive record, but you know the specific mention of the treasures of the king's house and the king's mother being taken away. And again, that's the end of people who are proud and arrogant. But what happened to Jehoiachin in the end? He actually obeyed Jeremiah's words and decided to surrender to the king of Babylon. This is what happened to him 37 years later. It came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, in the 12th month, on the 27th day of the month, that Evil-Merodach, king of Babylon, in the year that he began to reign, did lift up the head of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, out of prison. Isn't that amazing? 37 years later, he'd been in the Babylonian dungeons all that time, and now he was to sit at the king's table. And he spake kindly to him and set his throne above the throne of the kings that were with him in Babylon. So he became perhaps the most recognized of all the captive kings that were there in Babylon. He changed his prison garments and did eat bread continually before him all the days of his life. You know what a wonderful thing that Jehoiachin was eventually rescued, because obedience does pay off. He finally gave in and submitted to what Jeremiah said he should do, which is to surrender. And because he did that, he preserved the line of the house of David. So what a wonderful thing that was. Let's take some consideration now of the family of Jehoiachin, where it ended up. This is the record of 1 Chronicles chapter 3 of the sons of Jeconiah, or Jehoiachin, or Coniah. He had Asher, Salathiel, Malchiram, and Pedaiah, and Shenazah, Jechemiah, Hoshema, and Nedabiah. And he had a large family while he was in prison in Babylon. When you go to the Matthew chapter 1 and the genealogy of the Lord Jesus Christ, the book of the generations of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham, you come down to verse 12, and after they were brought to Babylon, Jeconias begat Salathiel, and Salathiel begat Zerubbabel, and so the line goes down to the Lord Jesus Christ. So again, he was now significantly continuing the line of the house and the throne of David. And he would take that line down to Christ. So his obedience in surrendering led him to continuing that line. And he had many children in Babylon. So again, Jehoiachin is some glimmer of hope for the future, for Jehoiachin's eternal outcome. Because he did eventually obey the word of God, and he was eventually raised up by the king of Babylon to sit at the king's table. Quite a wonderful outcome for his obedience. Nehushta obviously died in Babylon, and we only presume that she probably, and we hope that she might have learned her lesson, but maybe she didn't. No record is given of her other than when she went to Babylon, a widow. So that's another one of the sons of Josiah in Jehoiakim and his wife, and the grandson of Josiah in Jehoiachin, all taken away into captivity or put to death. What a tragedy this family was. Jehoahaz to die in Egypt, Jehoiakim viciously murdered by the Babylonians for his wickedness, Nehushta taken into captivity, a widow, Jehoiachin 37 years in prison. You know, what a tragic family it was. And of course, Zedekiah was no better. He would be slain by the Babylonians after witnessing the death of his own sons at their hands. Tragic family when you go through it. And you do wonder, don't you, what God has in store for good King Josiah. Well, the lessons that we take from Jehoiakim's family are very clear. Jehoiakim was rebuked for not following his father's good example. He rebuked the older sons for following worldly fashion. Jehoiakim's refusal to hear the word of God secured his death. God rebuked the dishonest dealings with tradesmen. The whole family pride in material luxury was soundly condemned. And the Proverbs takes it up in that proverb in Proverbs 16. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. In Proverbs 21 verse 4, a high look and a proud heart and the ploughing of the wicked is sin. And God brings down those who are proud. And he certainly did with the family of Jehoiakim. Well, let's just think about Josiah. How hard is it going to be when Josiah learns what happened to his family? I want to give you a suggestion to think about as we conclude this study. Josiah was taken away so he would not see the coming calamities, that he would not see the fate of his sons and his grandsons. He died young. He died at the age of 39, still trying to save the nation. At the resurrection, he will learn about the terrible things his sons did and the untimely and terrible deaths his sons and grandsons were to suffer. Maybe only Jehoiachin will be the compensation that he has from the record we've considered so far. But maybe there's another reward in store for Josiah, because there was another son who never got to sit on the throne of the kingdom of Judah. When we go to the first of Chronicles chapter 3 and verse 15, we find that there are four sons in the family of Josiah. I want you to notice, as we look at these four sons, that all of the sons of Josiah and the grandsons of Josiah that we have all had multiple names. And some of those names were consistent with more than one son. Jehoahaz was also called Jehanan or Shalom. And Shalom seems to have been a name that was very much in the family mix. Jehoiakim was also called Eliakim. Zedekiah was called Mattaniah. And then we find there's a fourth son. In fact, he's actually the third son that was born, but a son called Shalom, who never got to sit on the throne. So where did he go? Why did he not sit on the throne? Why was he not used to sit upon the throne? I want to go back three generations. Let's go back to Hezekiah, who's Josiah's great-grandfather. And the following words were given to Hezekiah. Remember, Hezekiah made a mistake in receiving the Babylonian emissaries that came after he was recovered from his illness. And he showed them all the wealth of the nation. He showed them the wealth of the temple, the wealth of the king's house, and all the treasures that Jerusalem had. And they went home with their notebooks full up of where the treasures could be found, because they would eventually come back and take all those things. And again, it seems Hezekiah had a moment of pride where he wanted to show off those things, and it was condemned by God. And so God said these following words to Hezekiah, king of Judah. And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget. And bear in mind the word sons means, you know, your descendants, not just your own sons. Your own descendants that issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, that shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Now that's an incredibly specific prophecy. It's talking about descendants of Hezekiah who would become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Just take that and throw that away in your mind. This is just the complete passage, what God said. Behold, the days come that all is in thine house, and that which thy fathers have laid up in store until this day shall be carried to Babylon, nothing shall be left, saith Yahweh. And of thy descendants that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. So, who could have been the fulfillment of that prophecy? God doesn't make prophecies that don't come to pass. It had to be a direct descendant of Hezekiah that would fulfill this. So it couldn't be true of Jehoiachin, because he had many children in Babylon. He was not made a eunuch by the Babylonians. None of the other royalty that the Babylonians took captive, like Jehoahaz, who went to Egypt, nothing like Jehoiakim, who was killed by the Babylonians, and his children were also killed. Nothing like Zedekiah, who was killed with his children. So, you know, we have a situation where none of the family of Hezekiah could fulfill this prophecy, because Jehoiachin went to Babylon, but he had many children. So just notice how rare the king's seed was by the time we come to the captivity in Babylon. Ezekiel only had one son, Manasseh. Manasseh only had one son, Ammon. Ammon only had one son, Josiah. So the king's seed is very rare for three generations. Josiah had four sons. Jehoahaz dies in Egypt. No sons of his are recorded. Jehoiakim slain, and it says no seed was left to him after Jehoiachin was taken away. So his family were also destroyed. Zedekiah and his sons were all killed by Nebuchadnezzar. So Jehoiachin goes to Babylon, was not one of the king's seed who made a eunuch. He had many children. So who was it that would go to Babylon to fulfill that prophecy? Somebody had to fulfill God's prophecy given to Hezekiah. Well, let's go back to the four sons. Can't be Jehoahaz. Can't be Jehoiakim. It can't be Zedekiah. It has to be Shalom. Now, he never was a king. So bear in mind, all of these kings had more than one name. So what was the other name that Shalom had? Well, I think he was Daniel. And here's why. Because in some dynasties, names are often frequently used. You go through the names used by King Charles. You go through the names used by his uncles, his mother's brothers. You see there's some very interesting names there. But common names are not unusual in families of royalty. Jehoiachin, Josiah's grandson, only had more than one name. He was called Coniah or Jeconiah. So all the sons of one grandson of Josiah were given the throne of Judah except Shalom, the fourth son of Josiah. Why not? Well, I believe it was Daniel. Daniel was born in the year that the law was found. We believe Daniel was about 17 when he arrived in Babylon, which meant that he was therefore born when Josiah was 26, which was the year the law was found. His name, Daniel, means the judgment of Yah. And when the king Josiah read the law for the first time, he was impressed with the judgments of God that were hanging over their heads. And he was trembling and rent his garments because of those impending judgments. How logical to name that son the judgment of Yah. Because Daniel was born in the year the law was found. He was only 13 when Josiah was killed. So he had an upbringing where he had his father with him for 13 years. You can imagine how much his father would have tried to impress those boys with divine lessons. But of course, the older two sons were almost the same age as their father, only being 13 or 14 years difference. Now you've got a son whose father is 26 when he's born and 39 when he dies. And that's more effective in training Daniel to be the man that he would be. Daniel went to Babylon as a eunuch in the fourth year of Jehoiakim. And we know that happened because that was the first captivity when they took away people from Jerusalem to Babylon. And amongst them was the king's seed. And look what arrives in Babylon. A wonderful 17-year-old with incredible faith, great courage to stand up to the idols of Babylon, an excellent spirit, and he's fit to stand before a king. Look at the qualifications the Babylonians sought out. The king spake to Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science and had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, of whom they might teach the learning and tongue of the Chaldeans. And you can see, can't you, that it was the king's seed, and there was a very little king's seed around by the time this captivity took place. The only son of a king that was available was Shalom, the son of Josiah. And I believe that was Daniel. There were others taken, like the three friends of Daniel, who were of the princes. Now that means, when it says princes, doesn't mean they were royalty. What that means was they were of the rulers of the nation. They were probably sons of the generals. They were probably people who were in the courts of the king. They were people who had an education in being in a king's palace, and that's why they had ability to stand in a king's palace. And Daniel had certainly had that. He'd learnt that from his early years. At the age of 17, he arrives in Babylon, and he's made into a eunuch. And the prophecy that was made to Hezekiah was to be fulfilled. Well, the Babylonians had a policy. Now, in Ezekiel 17 and verse 12 to 13, we have a prophecy which is about what would happen to Jehoiachin how in the days of Zedekiah, he was being held in Babylon as a captive to control King Zedekiah on the throne back in Judah. You see, kings like Jehoiakim had broken his covenant to the Babylonians. He stopped paying his tribute. Zedekiah did the same thing. So what the Babylonians had done in the case of Zedekiah, when they put him on the throne, they took Jehoiachin, his nephew, captive with the view that if he have a nephew in Babylon who they can torture or kill, then Zedekiah will behave himself. And this was the plan of the Babylonians to make kings pay their tribute. And it's mentioned in the part of this prophecy against King Zedekiah. Say now to the rebellious house, know ye not what these things mean? Tell them, behold, the king of Babylon has come to Jerusalem, has taken the king thereof and the princes thereof, and led them with him to Babylon. And it's referring to the captivity of Jehoiachin. He's taken of the king's seed and made a covenant with him and made an oath of him and taken of the mighty of the land. And again, this was the policy of the Babylonians, to take away these remnants of royalty to control that one that was left on the throne. And that was the prophecy against Zedekiah that was there. So there was a Babylonian policy in place that I believe also took place in the case of Daniel. They would think that by having Shalom in their captivity, or Daniel as he probably was, that they would be able to control Jehoiakim, but it proved not to be the case because Jehoiakim cared for nobody but himself. So just consider that. Was Shalom, the missing son of Josiah, also Daniel? Well, we know this about Daniel. He totally refuses any connection to idolatry. He learnt that, I believe, from Josiah. He had a very clear picture of what was right and wrong about serving food offered to idols. Daniel is discreet. He's a natural leader. He's able to stand before kings. That's what you'd expect from somebody who had 13 years with King Josiah. He's described as being of the king's seed to fulfill that prophecy made to Hezekiah. And I believe Nebuchadnezzar took Daniel away as security for Jehoiakim's loyalty. That's only a suggestion. If you don't want to follow that, that's fine. But it just seems to make sense. And there had to be a fulfillment of the king's seed being made a eunuch. And I believe took place in the case of Shalom, who also was known as Daniel. If that is the case, just think of the compensation this will be for King Josiah at the resurrection. Sad as he may be about the fate of his other sons and grandsons, what a consolation it will be for him to know that his son Daniel became the shining light in Babylon, one who was able to influence the policies of Babylon, to influence the decree of Cyrus, finally, to be a great inspiration for those in the captivity, to work with Ezekiel in shaping those who would come back, and to be the man that God used to deliver the prophecies of Daniel that we have in the latter chapters of his book. Daniel was a grand, greatly beloved by heaven, as he was told in Daniel chapter 10. O man, greatly beloved, I am come for thy words. What a consolation that will be for good King Josiah. And truly, while God cannot forgive evil and unrighteous men like Jehoiakim, maybe like Nehushta, God does lift up the head of Jehoiachin, and God perhaps has a great reward in store for the good King Josiah. Thank you.